Welcome to the Next Us 818 podcast, a reflective platform for connecting past successes with future progress in the African American community. I'm your host, Doc JC. The inaugural series of Next Us 818 podcast features descendants of the 6888 Central Postal Directory Battalion. The 6888 was a unique U.S. Army unit which had the distinction of being the only all African American, all-female battalion to serve in the European Theater of Operations during World War II. I am pleased to welcome to Episode 2 a descendant of Major Mary Frances Kearney, who served in the 6888. My guest tonight is Dr. Sheila Kearney, the niece of Major Mary Frances Kearney of Connecticut. Welcome, Dr. Kearney.
Hello. I'm happy to be here with you today.
I am so excited to have you as my very first guest.
I'm honored.
So I'd like to start with a few pretty amazing facts that you shared with me. First, Your Aunt Mary Frances Kearney graduated from Howard University in 1928. Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Yes. She actually was not the only member of her family to graduate from Howard. She had a sister who graduated from the nursing school, and then her brother graduated from Howard Medical School.
All in the 20s also?
Yes.
Oh, that's very impressive.
Probably with her brother was in the late 30s, and then her sister would have been in the early 30s.
Very impressive.
Mm-hmm.
A second, she was an officer candidate training in Des Moines, Iowa, with Lieutenant Colonel Charity Adams, the commander of the 6888 Battalion.
That's true. I'm not sure of the date when she actually was sent to Iowa, but when Mary first joined the Army, she actually did her initial training at Fort Devens, Massachusetts. She and other candidates from the Connecticut area went there and spent the typical amount of time, you know, doing boot training and then also testing. They tested them in every type of way, you know, cognitive testing, physical testing, and basically prepared them for officer training.
Okay. And the third fascinating fact to me is that you live in the house that your Aunt Mary built with GI benefits she received from having served in the 6888. That's pretty incredible.
That is true. I refer to it as 214. Mary built this house in 1957. And I have me being born in 1954, I literally grew up here. But even though they were awarded GI benefits, unfortunately, Mary wasn't able to use them directly with the house because according to the bank here, and I did some research and I still have the paperwork of the house, the planning for the house, they found that because she was of childbearing age, and she must have been in her late 40s or mid 40s, but then it was due to the fact she was unmarried. So they had a rule with People's Bank that they would not give a loan to women because of that issue. So she basically had to pay cash for it. So she worked a number of years, saved, and then made her 4 installments to pay for the home.
Yes. Interesting and very discriminatory. So if she had been a man, that would not have been an issue.
Yes, but that is true. It's interesting how a lot of times people think Connecticut was kind of always open, and there were a lot of struggles here for people of color during that time. Her mother, Mary, was born in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and her mom faced the same issue. Mary's mother and father wanted to purchase a home in Bridgeport, but unfortunately, because they were Black and it was a predominantly white neighborhood, they had to buy the house through a broker, and they were able to achieve it. And that's the address that's listed on Mary's notes during the war. It was 406 Newfield Avenue, Bridgeport.
So let's talk some more about Mary. So when she graduated from Howard, she was then she went into service in the mid four early 40s. So she was in her 40s at that time.
Yes, I believe she would have been
early 40s.
Early 40s, late 30s. Mary is one of the first Black women who joined the service. This came after it was a collaboration between Eleanor Roosevelt, First Lady, and Mary McLeod Bethune, who was advocating that how can women serve in the World War? And they came up with an opportunity. When Mary first heard about it, she was one of the initial office females who signed up. And therefore, she received her letter and was off for training at Fort Devens. She made the cut there and then was sent to Fort Des Moines, or no, let me correct, Des Moines, Iowa, and proceeded there, where she met up with Major Adams and other women who became officers in the 6888.
So now, what was Mary doing between the time she graduated from Howard and the time she enlisted?
Well, it was very interesting. Immediately after graduation, she became a house mother for AKA. For those of you who don't know, that's Alpha Kappa Alpha. Maybe some of you have heard of it recently because it's the same sorority that the Vice President Kamala Harris is a member of. And I have Mary's kind of army record, where she notes that she was responsible to enforce the rules for the girls who were living there in the house. And I think that's where she got her initial training of being in command. And as I said, she was probably very good at it.
So it was,
and then it was after that, she did that for approximately 2 years, according to that record. That's something that I hope to share with the museum. She returned to Connecticut with hopes of becoming a school teacher in the Bridgeport Public School System. She wanted to teach French. She really, really was excited about becoming a teacher, but unfortunately she was refused because of the fact she was Black. After trying to get any other opportunities working with the school system, she had to settle for a job as an elevator lift girl, as they call it, in one of the downtown businesses in Bridgeport. I guess many people listening might not be familiar with the fact that the elevators used to have actual people who used to take you floor to floor. And, you know, thank God with technology now, you can just go in and push a button. But she did that for, I would say, about 8 years. And then when the war broke out, she signed up and was off.
But it was still a courageous thing for a young Black woman to enlist in the Army in the 40s. What do you think made her special?
Mary was brilliant. As I said, she was one of the few people I know, and I've had a chance, as you, to spend time in academia, but Mary could do a New York Times crossword puzzle. She would start it after dinner and then take a nap, and it would be finished in about 2 hours. I would say she was a wordsmith. One of the things I found in some of her artifacts, she would have pages and pages and pages of words. Probably some that are unfamiliar to us in our typical use of English, but she, whenever there was a new word, she would write it out, and it would be probably be a dictionary of special words, because she was on it with that. She, as I heard stories, she also loved bridge, and she loved those kind of thinking games. I know she used to try to teach me chess, and I probably settled more on Chinese checkers because I was one of those. I wanted to kind of a faster moving game. But yeah, that's something that was always good. She was always reading books and books and books are around the house. And ever since I started reading, she would have a pile of books for me to read every summer that I spent with her growing up.
So you think that influenced her decision to join the service?
Oh, yes, I think she was ready for adventure.
Okay.
When she went off to college, she had a career plan to be a teacher, as I said earlier, but she just felt that she had something more to give and that she wanted to make a contribution to our country. She was very proud of being an American. It meant a lot to her. I found a lot of items in her reading about that, about the United States, about history, and about the struggles of African American people, since the beginning here.
I think
She
a
was
lot.
very sensitive to that. She was basically familiar with the African diaspora because of interest in making a contribution, connecting, trying to educate those who were coming behind her. That, the struggle has not ended, it continues.
I think a lot of people may have trouble understanding how, given the level of racism in the country at the time, how a person might decide to make that sacrifice and make that decision to serve. So it's important to hear these stories
Yeah.
to
And then,
understand how two things can be true at the same time.
right. And then, even though Mary was kind of, I guess, a leader in a sense, being a commanding officer. She had a fun side about her. She was very social, and she was of that age when, during the Harlem Renaissance, she would go there and spend time. So I'm sure she had a chance to kind of meet and share in the spirit of what was going on there with the challenges that were facing African Americans. And what people were thinking and doing about it.
So it's my understanding you spend a lot of your summers, well, almost every summer with her. What did she tell you about? Did she talk about why she decided to enlist, or what did you kind of
No,
surmise? Did she ever talk about that?
not directly. It was me basically asking her for some reason. Subconsciously, I knew that she was in the war. And then it was more so after certain things she said and studying history and talking to you and others, now that the 6888 are about to receive a Congressional Gold Medal, I've been able to piece things together. Looking at some of the artifacts of if I found something around the house, I would ask her about it. And she says, oh, I got that when I was in France. She was into perfumes and all of the fineries that Paris has to offer. And that was basically it. I got a lot of her stories from her sister who lived here with her at 214. Where she would tell me about Mary in the war, and of course, her two brothers who also served in World War II. One was my father, and then for my cousin, Marcia Fabio, who unfortunately could not join us today, her father was part of the medical corps during World War II.
Some of your family story sounds very similar to mine as well. Because as you know, my mother was in the 6888 and her brother was in the service as well. So my mother has lots of pictures from crates and crates of photos that she took when she was in the service. And that whole spirit of adventure was certainly very much a part of her story that she would tell us about as we were growing up as kids. So Mary kept a wonderful journal that you've told me about. So you want to share some of that with the audience? Tell us what you found, and are there any interesting stories in there? Anything funny? Anything painful? Any scary memories or anything? What did you see in that journal or gather or learn from that journal?
Well, it's a very it's a book in itself because it shows her initial photos when she was in Iowa and when she was promoted to captain. She was very proud. She would write little notations underneath. She would write about some of members of her staff, and certain activities that they participated in. They could be training activities as well as social activities. In that, there were photos of her travels. She went to different forts around the country. I recall one in Arizona, one in Texas, where I guess she was doing specific training. Initially, Mary was part of the motor pool, and I noted that there were certain certificates that she was awarded for certain qualifications. That is, I guess, the first part of what she was doing before she was named as a commanding officer when I guess they were getting ready to go overseas.
Okay. So when she came back, what did she do when she finished her military service back in after 46?
Yeah, one of the things she did use her GI Bill for was education. When she left the military, she enrolled at the University of Michigan and got a degree in library science. Upon completing that, she was able to get a job at the New York Public Library for where she worked until her retirement in the mid-70s. So every day after building the home here in Milford, she would take a train. Okay, for those of you not familiar with Milford, Milford is about 10 miles south of New Haven. And she would take the train every morning into New York City and then walk the two blocks over to the New York Public Library. She spent most of her time there, but often she was assigned and had special projects over at the 125th Street Harlem Public Library, which is part of the New York Public Library. And luckily, I have many of her paperwork that she accumulated during that time. And actually, I plan to have setting up a meeting with the New York Public Library because I want them to possibly consider a special exhibit for women of the 6888 that should be shared with the public. And maybe we could talk off camera about that.
Okay, all right.
Yes.
So do you recall any lessons that she learned through her service that she passed on to the family, or any values or traditions that were passed on as a consequence of its service?
I have to say it was perseverance. Having her, she was a very confident woman. Obviously, she knew she was very intelligent. She loved challenge, and she basically instilled that with me. You know, let's not sit and be comfortable. Let's keep moving forward. Let's set a goal and try to achieve it. I would say she was a very, very strong inspiration for me pursuing college and then two master's and a doctorate degree. One story I have to share with you was I graduated in 1975, and my first job out of college, I became a special ed teacher in the Boston Public School System. And when I got the job, I called her, and she was just elated. When I came home to see her, to visit with her in Milford, I mean, we just talked and talked and talked about that experience. And then after those years of being in this the school room, she would just love hearing about the stories, interacting with the kids, with other teachers. And after about 3 years, that's when I decided to go back and get a master's. And this was at Boston College. I think we're both alumni of. And she really applauded that and was supportive of that. And even told me, Sheila, if you don't have the funds to do it, I'll pay for it for you, because she really believed in getting more and more education as much as you can. Unfortunately, she wasn't alive when I was admitted to Harvard, because I'm sure she would have been at that graduation. She was at every other graduation I can remember. But Mary believed in Christ and in God. She was an Episcopalian and attended church. I remember her coming to my confirmation, and we had various discussions on that. I was also Mary's traveling partner, because as she got up in age, she wanted to continue exploring, seeing the world, and every summer we took a trip somewhere. We've been to Mexico together. It was a Harvard alum group that went one summer, and then we would go to various places in the islands. I remember Jamaica, Barbados, Guadalupe, and I'm sure she probably would have gone wanted to go to more places, but unfortunately, she was becoming ill, and she was getting weak. And I remember I saw her about 2 weeks before she passed, and she was thinking about going to Montreal, and she wanted to make arrangements for us to travel together. But unfortunately, it fell through. That was another dynamic I must brings. This question brings to mind was Mary. She was amazingly strong. Apparently, I found out after, because her brother was a physician, and he later told us that she had suffered from cancer, but she never complained about it. She never said one damn word about it. She would get up every morning, go outside, garden, try to rake something. Often my father would come up and she would direct him to go and do things, cut the grass, cut it this way, not that way, pick up apples. And I never heard her complain, because I'm sure she must have been in pain. I remember seeing all the aspirin she would take. But that was something about her. And now that I think about it, and I'm getting to that age myself, wow. Yeah, because she passed away. She was about 70 years old. And now with I'm going to be 68 this year, I'm saying, she probably was feeling the pain of that.
She was young when she passed.
She was. And she was alert to the very, very end. She never lost it. She always kind of had her routine. And she would set up and do her crossword puzzles every Sunday and throughout the week. And I would always get a history lesson, or she was somebody I could talk to about perspective, looking at Blacks in history, especially in this country, the different kinds of struggles that we had to endure. She was very up on civil rights, a member of the NAACP. And as I said, I learned a lot from her about what was going on in Africa. The various leaders, Jomo Kenyatta, that was someone that she used to follow very much. And as I said, probably if she'd lived a little longer, I know she would have wanted to go back to France. Another thing, I also remember she did host a party here for some of her army buddies. And that's probably, now that I think about it, thank you for this, was when we first started talking about her in the army. Because I don't remember all the names, and I wish I was old enough to write them down. But one of her friends was a woman from New York. Her name was Frances Flats. I think she was a lieutenant, and they remained friends because Frances, after the war, became a travel agent, and a lot of the trips that Mary would take, she went through Frances to give her business, and proceed with wherever she wanted to go. But She always had a smile when she talked about, some of the women she knew. And that was a trying time, I'm sure, for all of them. There was another story that I found after the word I never had a chance to talk to her about, but there were three women who were unfortunately were killed when they were in Europe. This was in Rouen, France. It was a horrible traffic accident. They had received permission to go to a social event, and unfortunately, on the way home, they were killed. It was three soldiers, female soldiers. Two were from Connecticut, and there was one from New York. And of course, there were a couple of male soldiers who were injured, and one was killed. I believe Mary knew the family of the one that was killed in Bridgeport, Connecticut, since that's where she also lived. And that's one of the things I'm hoping to do now is to identify their family and make as many women aware or family members aware that their family members who served in the 6888 are going to be awarded a national and a very national honor of being recipients of the Congressional Gold Medal for their service.
There's so much rich history with the 6888 that very few people know about. I think it's an important body of work that you're trying to do and that others are trying to do to spread this word to America and to our young people.
Yes, we were there in every war, and we made contributions that now need to be righted.
Okay, so Dr. Sheila Kearney, let's talk about your very impressive credentials. You have a bachelor's degree from Northeastern University, master's from Boston College, and you have a second master's as
Yes.
well. So that's not from Boston College. That's from the
That
North.
was a first step to my doctorate from Harvard. I received it in 1988 in administration planning and social policy.
And then you went on to pursue your doctorate from there at Harvard.
Yes.
Very, very impressive. Very impressive, Crimson. There. So you are a professionally certified executive life, health, and wellness coach
Yes, yes.
in your current professional iteration, correct?
Among other things, of course, I dip and dab in other things. Most recently, I had a contract as an executive director of a daycare center. I would refer to myself as, of course, as a coach, consultant, but also a lifelong educator. Educating the young has always been very important to me. But right now, I am focusing on coaching. My most recent credential is in health and wellness coaching, and it's becoming a growing field now. As the dominant portion of our population is getting older, we have something that we should monitor and keep up on. But also with the difficulties of a pandemic, I'm also concerned about mental health and well-being, and then that's another area of focus that I have. I have been really doing a lot of consulting on diversity, inclusion, and belonging. One of my most famous mentors, who was I was I would say my closest mentor was Dr. Chester Pierce, who was a professor at Harvard Medical, Harvard School of Public Health, and the School of Education. And Dr. Pierce did a lot of his research on the effects of discrimination and actually had coined the term about what microaggressions do to people, and which leads to a lot of stress and anxiety that people of color have had to endure. Maybe not just people of color, women, or in the workplace or
Yes,
in
yes.
life. and how they can affect morale and so
Suicide rates.
yes. And the feeling that, okay, why try if you are kind of part of a chosen class that can never succeed. You have to kind of break through that mindset that yes, you can. And that's one of the things I have to say about Mary. She always said, Sheila, do it. You can do it. You can do it.
So I was going to say, that's why these stories are so important. I mean, a lot of times, I often think that, as I thought about the pandemic myself, that a lot of the younger, as I watched a lot of the younger people go through this experience, that whole internal fortitude that our elders had, I'm not sure it exists right now. So it's important to tell these stories that you can get through this. You can get through this and get on the other side of it.
And
And
that's it. Yes, yes. We have to tell them, yes, you can do it. You have to have somebody who is behind you and pushes you forward. So yes, being an educator, and I think we are all educators, especially you, Doc, all that you have done, we have to kind of keep pushing those behind us forward, that they can do it.
Now, I know you've also done some work with Gallup. You want to talk about that? And you've done your research work. You want to tell us about your research interests?
Yes, I had a great career there at Gallup. I had a chance to live in several different of their offices, or work in several offices of Gallup, I should say. When I first joined, I was with their Princeton office, and there I was a selection analyst and leadership facilitator. Gallup does a lot of workplace consulting, doing assessments, helping employers make the best decisions on who they should hire, and then also talent development. I did that for a while, and then by nomination of the chair and CEO, I became the executive director for the Gallup International Positive Psychology Summit, which was an annual event of expert psychologists who would come together in Washington and present their research on models of excellence and how we can apply and replicate being the best that we can be. Also, how to manage the most, I would say, positive workplaces and communities and schools so people could be their best and thrive.
So, I'm sorry.
Okay, also at Gallup, I became a liaison for the Thurgood Marshall College Fund, which is the, I would say, sister of the United Negro College Fund. The Thurgood Marshall College Fund is a program of all of the historically Black public colleges and universities, which are approximately 47. It's the largest share of students going to those member schools. And we work closely along with the chairman and CEO who became chairman of their board on promoting development and raising funds. And we had a chance to develop an annual career fair where students would come from all of the 47 schools. We would do a leadership development program with them, and then they would have a chance to meet various recruiters from companies, government agencies, nonprofits who would want to help diversify their workforces.
What motivated you to pursue your educational and career path?
I would have to say it was a strong lead from my Aunt Mary. She wanted to be a teacher, even though she never had a, hammer on my over my head to say, hey, you're going to be one. And that's what I love about her. She just kind of let me develop and go the way that I was naturally inclined. And then she was supportive of that. But as I said, being a teacher was a very important foundation for me. It was my first role out of college. I was a special ed teacher, and Boston was going through a very interesting time then because of a recent court ruling that Boston Public Schools had to desegregate. And so it was becoming a teacher during a time of major protest. You had children being bused to various locations. And then I really, really enjoyed it. I came to love all of my students and wanted to be the person that can kind of create the path for their best in life. I would say that was probably one of the times where I first started coaching, because, you know, each person was different and I wanted to help set each child on a successful career plan, first by achieving their education.
So you live, I mean, you live in the presence of your aunt, I mean, living in the house with her, with the pictures there and the memorabilia. And you think now, as you think back, what does her, any reflections on her, what her life and her legacy mean to you today?
I am exceptionally proud of being her niece. And, you know, I just wish she was here, that I could share that with her directly. It was, God, I'm trying to think of how best to say it. With Mary, I was introduced to so many things I probably would have not had the chance to, because she had that worldwide perspective. Any chance to travel, she was very supportive of it. And because she did it, I wanted to try to do it myself. The other thing is, you know, Mary had a unique, we had a very interesting family dynamic, was because Mary's brother, Dr. Bill Kearney, married Jackie Washington, who was Marcia Fabio, Kearney Fabio's parents. And I had a unique perspective through them because of the fact that her aunts were Freddie Washington, who was a acclaimed Black actress going back to the 1920s. And her sister, Isabel, was the first wife of Adam Clayton Powell. So we had that dynamic too. And it was kind of a very dominant, I wouldn't say militant, but it was Black pride. You know, we are strong, we are educated, and we are going to change things for, you know, those who come behind.
That's important.
Yeah.
So as we move to wrap up tonight, I just have a few more questions. What do you think about your aunt's decision to serve the country, given the level of racism at the time?
I believe she thought this was her opportunity to do her part to change things for the better, for members of her family and those African Americans who lived in her community. Hey, what the hell? She had a chance to get out of the elevator and you know, serve the United States.
Your reflection reminds me of something. And my mother, in writing her own, well before she passed, wrote her own obituary. And as she, mm-hmm. part of that, she wrote her story about deciding to go into the service. And she said, she looked over to one of her, to a friend, and said, "Ruth, there has to be a better life than this." And so it's a decision to kind of do something yes. different, that this is an opportunity to kind of strike out and do something different. And carve out a better life than African American, certainly women had at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So, your statement reminded me of that.
Mary was the first WAC to sign up in her hometown of Bridgeport, Connecticut. black, white, or whatever. She was the first, and there are newspaper articles about her leaving the elevator and being promoted by the U.S. Army. She got an immediate promotion from the elevator to captain.
We've mentioned it here a couple of times about a museum, and there's actually, for the audience, there's a women's military museum at Fort Lee, Virginia, and they're actually preparing now to do an exhibit on the 6888. So you should keep an eye out for that in the next year.
I definitely will, and I'd love to make a contribution to them of some of Mary's artifacts during the war.
And we're planning to do the same thing. So another question, given where the country is right now, the strife and the animus, do you think that your aunt would make the same choice today to serve the nation?
Yes, without hesitation. I guess she had that pride and confidence that, yeah, what little she could do, she was there to do it.
It was always so interesting that families, that so many members of families went to serve at the same time. As you describe your family, my family, so many others had, you know, a lot of the sons, and then certainly in our cases, you know, with the daughters also were serving.
And with her youngest brother, who was my father, he passed away in 2011. Dad was a member of the first segregated, I should say, desegregated unit that went in the European theater, that went throughout Europe, and it was the 12th Armored Division, the Mystery Division. And if I could just share a little bit, I have some of the letters that they wrote between each other. And, you know, I think they had a couple of chances where they were able to see each other in Europe. And some of those letters, of course, were Dad saying, "Hey, well, Mary, you have all these women here. Can you introduce me to a couple?" you know, as with your family members too, who fought during World War II and other wars, it was tough. You know, they were putting their lives on the line, but they did it for their country, for the love of their country, and what they thought their country could become. And that's what I think keeps us engaged on how we can get it there,
right,
to what the United States is going and supposed to be.
Which is a good segue to my final question.
Mm-hmm.
What lessons from Mary's life story can you share to inspire young African Americans to embrace fear as opportunity in order to shatter glass ceilings and be their best selves? This kind of ties in with your life coaching also.
Okay. Get your education and be confident, and confident in what you know, because you are important. I think a lot of times we're kind of led to believe that, you know, there's not much we can do to change things, but every little bit counts. And that's what Mary would say, keep going and keep growing. And begin with your faith in God and faith in yourself.
Well, Dr. Kearney, thank you so much for joining us tonight and sharing your family story. I am so grateful.
Oh, thank you. And as I said, I believe now we're sisters of descendants of the 6888. I'm happy to be with you.
Okay.
Thank you all for listening to Next Us 818 podcast. I hope you enjoyed our show. If you have specific questions or topics you'd like to discuss, or would like to be a guest on the show, please email the show at nextus818podcast@gmail.com. That's nextus818podcast@gmail.com. I like to end each show with a favorite reflection. Tonight, I will share a quote from George Sheehan. Success means having the courage, the determination, and the will to become the person you believe you are meant to be. To that, I would add, dare to dream and have the courage to act. See you at our next show on Wednesday, October 5th at 7 p.m. You can catch us on Anchor and Spotify.